Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. Hello, Amanda.
Hi, Marie. How are you?
Very well, thank you. I'm excited for our, is this our second roundup style episode or third?
Yes, number two.
Number two. I love that what we are doing today is exactly what I just said, a roundup where we are giving you some of the best snippets of older episodes. Many of our listeners are newer to the Brave New Teaching podcast and may have missed these before, or you've been, you know, around the bend a few times like me and you forget what you've already heard. And therefore, some of these things bear repeating, you know?
Well, and I'm kind of in disbelief that we are fast approaching 200 episodes.
Fast approaching 200 episodes of the main podcast. And we're starting to make our way through, like, we're going to be at 100 happy hour episodes before we even know it.
Well, and that all is well and fine. But for the life of me, I don't understand how so many podcast platforms, it's really annoying to scroll through and find what you need. Right.
It is.
So like, we really are thinking that not only is this good for you to get like the highlights of what you might be searching for in terms of poetry and like get your, you know, get all jazzed up and excited about teaching poetry, but it's also going to serve as a way to help you catalog things and kind of know what we have to say about poetry and where to find it. In fact, we would love to invite you over to our YouTube channel where we are now also streaming the podcast. But what's really cool about our YouTube channel that we now have up and running is that we're able to give you a playlist of these episodes. So for the first time ever, you can go to the show notes for today and click on our YouTube playlist of our poetry episodes and listen to them on YouTube.
They're all the episodes in their entirety from the snippets that we will be giving to you today, which are like just the best little nuggets of each one. They give you a little taster so you can decide which ones if you want to pick and choose, or if you're like, you know what, I am just going to do some laundry and listen to them all the way through. You can just click on that playlist and like let it play through. Yeah, like Amanda was starting to say, something we have found both in teaching and in this side, like the Brave New Teaching side of things and in the classroom. Podcasts are awesome and they are amazing, but podcast platforms have not quite caught up to things like YouTube. Or even like TikTok and Instagram, where you've got like highlight bubbles and playlists that you can make where you can lump the content and like categorize content. That is just not something that quite exists in the podcast world as far as like our usage of it. Like, we can make a blog post that has a list of links, but then you as the listener have to sit there and like click through all the links. So we're trying to make this as user-friendly and just accessible so that you can get not just what you want, but what you actually need. Because again, we know our audience, your teachers, your educators, you do not have a whole lot of time. And so when you are taking time out of your own day to grow professionally, especially, we want to make it as easy as possible. So YouTube is going to be our foray into that. So let us know how you like it and how it works for you.
Well, and especially with, so what we're trying to also do with these roundup episodes is really highlight some of the cornerstone types of things that we talk about, right? So the first one we did was on backwards planning and lesson planning. Like, that is a huge corner of what we are trying to do. Poetry and creative writing, we actually love it so much. We did an entire workshop about the best teaching strategies. And like, we demonstrated a lot of these lessons. We created tutorials, we created resources, we went through all of that work. So at least if you're getting ready to teach a course, not only do you have this playlist, but you also have access to an entire workshop to get you ready to teach a course like this, or even a unit like this.
Yes, we have 5 different workshops right now, virtual workshops. We've got 2 on Shakespeare, 1 on poetry and creative writing, 1 on biography and memoir, and 1 on dystopia. And we've actually got a workshop week where we're going to be running a special on all of these coming up very soon. So if you're hearing us talk about workshops quite a bit lately, it's because we're getting ready to do like a little week-long event and we're really excited about it. But again, the way that we are structuring our workshops has the same idea in mind as we're talking about with like YouTube and these roundup episodes of finding ways to make the stuff that we know teachers need, even before they know they need it, simply because we might be a little bit further along in this teaching journey to like know and be able to pinpoint like that's what I would have needed. And it's things like curated lists that are really easy to get to. Totally. Giving me a list of links is helpful, but you know, it's like extremely helpful and productive is giving me a playlist that I can click and yes. keep moving and like keep doing the other things that I need to get done and also hear the information that will help me in my like teaching. So that is what we are doing and working on. And if it's working, let us know. And if you have a suggestion, also let us know. Just like send us an email or leave us a voicemail. Go to bravenewteaching.com and you can see that link. But I also love these roundup episodes because I like going back. We forget half of the things that we've already said, which is why we sound so repetitive. I mean, like any teacher, right? You're making the same joke 4, 5, 6 times a day, depending on how many class periods you have. And you forget how many times you've made it in any given class period. Like students are like, you just said that. And I'm like, no, I didn't. That was an hour ago. They go, that was 10 minutes ago. And I'm like, neat. This is cool.
I'm not losing it.
You're losing it. So we've got some of our favorite and best tips, tricks, ideas, strategies, and insights when it comes to approaching and even creating poetry with your students in your classroom for you today.
Yeah, enjoy. We hope you love it. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel because now we're living that life.
Subscribe. Absolutely. So yeah, we're going to just, you know, let our editing amazing helpers take it away, and let's go ahead and cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show.
This is something very near and dear to my heart is poetry, and even like the research around instructing poetry was something that I carried with me into my master's degree. And so I've got a lot to share. And the first piece of very official research I'd like to begin with is I did a very unofficial survey on Instagram not too long ago, and I asked teachers, why do you struggle with teaching poetry? I want to be clear. I assume people are struggling, which is why I phrased it that way. And you guys would be surprised. I kind of gave multiple choice answers. And I said, was it time, resources? And then the option that actually won by a landslide was teaching poetry intimidates me and I'm super insecure about my ability to do it. Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised because my answer was in between I lose time and the one you were just saying, the imposter syndrome one. Like, I feel like if I don't teach poetry to like do each poet and each poem justice, that I'm somehow cheating my students and therefore I'm a fraud and I should not have my job anymore. I mean, it's a little extreme, but that's kind of like where I go.
Slippery slope.
It is. It's a rough one, man.
Well, and that kind of lands us in the crisis we have right now, which is that a lot of teachers are just not doing it. We're just going to kind of like, no one's really requiring it. Common Core, and even I know in Illinois, we have some state standards apparently. But as I've looked through those, I've looked through Common Core, there is nothing concrete anywhere other than a little bit in NCTE that's really pushing English teachers to actually make sure that it's part of the curriculum. It's very much a suggestion at this point, and that's problematic for not only us, but our students, because poetry, guys, I want this episode to really be a how to build your poetry teacher confidence episode, because it's not as scary as we might envision the experience. And I think we can maybe break that down for you guys and make it a little bit more accessible.
No, absolutely. And I mean, selfishly, this is kind of like a one-on-one workshop for me that all of our listeners are getting to tune into. I don't find myself, like, I wouldn't say that I'm bad at teaching poetry. Like, I think because, like, Shakespeare is one of my real strong suits. So, like, I can teach poetry and the meaning behind words. I just don't think about it. Like, I forget sometimes about poetry, which I mean, okay, you know, smite me where I stand. Like, I get it. But also, I feel so pressed to get to, like, nonfiction text, because it's something that, at least because I'm in California, the UCs and the CSUs are like, teach nonfiction. You know, students need to be able to go to college and be able to read an article and get it. And I'm like, okay, cool. But then, like, I forget also to add poetry into my units. And then it's an afterthought. I also don't have a very wide experience, but I don't have a very expansive poetry catalog in my brain. And most of my poems go back to poems that are overdone, that they've already learned in middle school, and that are sonnets by William Shakespeare. So that's where this moment from somebody like you, Amanda, you've got such a passion for poetry, and you've got such a relatable way to make it real and tangible, not just for students, but for teachers. Because, I mean, we're the reason that, like, I am the reason that my students have not been learning about poetry this year. Sorry, guys. I know you're all listening. All the teenagers in San Diego are listening. Sorry, I didn't teach you better poetry.
I would say if you guys are using a novel unit of some sort and you're using an essential question, finding poems that are within the theme of that unit is really easy and tactile, easy for you to find. I love finding my poets. Poets.org has a really nicely organized search engine. You can search by genre, theme. You can search by poet, by year. So poets.org is beautiful. You can search for poems on YouTube. Guys, there's so much on the YouTube.
I do love the YouTube for a lot of reasons.
There's so much poetry. There's so much brilliant spoken word out there. And there's a lot of newer voices reading older poetry there too. And that's a really cool thing, because you can always pull up the same poem by two different videos and see how it's treated two different ways. I mean, YouTube's really an amazing source. I also love the hashtag on Twitter, even on Instagram, of Teach Living Poets. There's a lot of really cool recommendations that come out of that hashtag. So keep your social media eyes alive to find great new poems that are going to be easy for you.
I think another good place to look, and this is where, like, the internet is such a savior for people like me who are like, I don't have very much experience with poetry. And then I get all intimidated and I, like, shy away from it, like I was saying before. But, like, more and more, like, hashtags like Teach Living Poets, or even just, like, finding those key teachers or artists or what have you that you want to follow on social media, they will show you what they're reading, and what they're reading is probably going to be something you're interested in. Within the umbrella of a bigger idea. It's so much more interesting to teach that way too. I think it's more engaging for me, because if I'm not engaged as the teacher, the kids aren't going to be either.
Well, no, and I know you love to do a lot of, like, paired novels. It's like the same exact concept. When we pair things together and we ask kids to connect the dots, like, that's a whole nother critical thinking step that we definitely need to make sure that we're doing as English teachers, as teachers, period, is creating moments for critical thinking that the kids weren't expecting.
Absolutely.
That's so huge.
On those moments of, like, connection that are a little bit more convoluted, or even just, like, easy connections for them to make, that then our students feel like they've made a win, like, oh wow, something as hard and intimidating as poetry, and I've connected it to my novel, or I've connected it to, like, another text or life. I'm winning this English game.
Yeah. So here's, like, a really quick example. So I kind of made a list here of ways that you can embed it. So you don't have to read it, analyze it, discuss it, right? You can have a poem, and I've done a lesson before where I have just started the class by reading it, right? No pretense, no nothing. And I've said, which character wrote this poem?
Oh, that's so cool.
Right? So you can use it as this, like, creative tool. And then all of a sudden the lesson's actually an argument lesson, and the kids have to write an argument defending which character's voice this sounds more like and why.
And they've had to employ all of these skills that they didn't even, you're so sneaky, all these skills that they didn't even know they were employing, such as they have to understand the words and the message and the voice within the poem and then connect it and then use their own understanding and textual evidence to back it up. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, then it's not this dreaded, poetry, you know, right. I've definitely been there for the moments, and surprising them with poetry is easier to do than with an entire novel because poetry is manageable. It's class period size.
Yes.
And that's what I love about it. And I teach it. So on the writing side for argument, I've also had kids in my AP language class, which poetry is not really part of that curriculum either. But I would argue that most poems make an argument. They're telling you how the world is according to that speaker. And you can make claims and agree, disagree with a lot of the things that the poem is saying. And I think that that's a really powerful way to approach a quick lesson is, hey, this poet chose to use analogy and rhetorical questions to make this argument about blah, blah, blah. How did that work? How do you like it? Do you agree? Do you disagree? So don't feel like, again, that you have to reserve all this time to do a poetry unit. And then, I mean, you can, and that's awesome. I love doing poetry units, but having kids read, analyze, write, imitate, just go collect language. I mean, that's all part of the blending of the unit that's really fun and not overwhelming.
Yeah. And it just keeps you on your toes too. You get to just like do different stuff.
Amanda, what on earth is Poetry March Madness? Well, Poetry March Madness is a fun seasonal kind of game to play in your classroom. What's important is that you listen to the principles, the idea, and make it work where and when and however you want. So the idea behind Poetry March Madness is really the bracket system. So think through where and how you want students interacting with poems. The most common I've seen and the most common that I've used has been as bell work. So if we're going to do bell work, I want you to picture a bracket in your mind, or you can go to bravenewteaching.com and look at the bracket that I have. And this is how we're going to map out how many days of bell work we're going to get for the number of poems that we have. So each day we have two poems competing. And so day one might be poem A versus B. Then day two would be C versus D, then E versus F, G versus H. Okay, then we've kind of gone down a series. That's eight poems. Then we'll go through on the other side of the bracket, another set of pairings. Four more days or four more pairings. So for me, round one could take a week, right? So pair one, pair two, pair three, pair four. Then on my other side is pair one, pair two, pair three, pair four. So we've got 2 weeks, essentially, like a Monday through Thursday, full of bell work, the first 2 weeks. The next round is the reduction, right? So the losers are out, the winners have moved on. Round two then is two more sets of poems. So that is one other week. So there's more, I guess there's four more pairs for round two. And then the last week would be the finals. So in a Sweet 16 setup, again, this is going to make a lot more sense if you're looking on the bracket. A Sweet 16 setup for me would be approximately 1 month's worth of bell work, 4 weeks worth of bell work if you see your students every day in a 50-minute class period setup. If you want to do a different version, there's another way to do this. You could also choose all your poems ahead of time, assign them to your students. Maybe you put them all in Google Classroom and say, okay, this week I want you to read and listen to poems 1 through 8. Then on Friday, maybe your class comes together and after everyone's read and listened to and experienced the poems, we do all of our voting on one day. That's also possible. And then students have kind of had a little bit of time to sit with the pieces and some of the poems. If they're watching them on YouTube, they've had time to maybe watch a couple of times. And that's a really fun way to do this as well. All that is to say is figure out how many days you need so that you know how many poems you need in order to do that. That will be really powerful for you moving forward. I've got a lot more to say about poetry, and I will link those episodes for you below. I have just released a brand new Poetry Big 6 slide deck full of mini lessons if you're looking for new ways to step up your poetry instruction that I will link all in the show notes for you to check out when you have some time. What's most important is that we keep in mind the goals. creating opportunities for more and new voices to enter our classroom, giving students a chance to interact with poetry in a non-threatening and fun kind of way. Whatever you do, that's going to be paramount, and that's going to be powerful and life-changing for our students. Maybe we should start with an example.
I love that. Yes.
Okay.
This is a good idea.
Audience, are we familiar with the Langston Hughes poem, Harlem? Yes.
Everybody yes. Raise your hand.
It is the poem that is in the preface of Lorraine Hansberry's play, A Raisin in the Sun. By the way, I thought the poem was called A Raisin in the Sun. It is not. It is called Harlem. I will admit that out loud to all of the world listening. I had no idea. I was like, why is this called Harlem? But well, that's a whole other thing.
I think a lot of people also think that this poem is called A Dream Deferred, which is not. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Because I've seen it called that and I've been like, I don't remember that poem.
And here we are. So
yes.
If we're going to look at Harlem, there's two ways to do this. So normally when I do poetry, I analyze through the lens of the Big Six. So the Big Six mm-hmm. is speaker, paraphrase, theme, title, turns, and tools. So those are like just very like literary focused types of places to start your discussion about a poem. And they're great.
We've had an episode where Amanda talks through the Big Six. It was early on in the podcast. So we will put that down in the show notes in case you're going, oh my gosh, you're going too fast. We have more on this for you, but just kind of like hear us out and then maybe backtrack.
Yes. And I'm sharing about it all month long on Instagram and my Facebook group. So, I mean, if there's tons of it out there. But if we were to instead shift over to a rhetorical approach, we might use Space Cat. And so Space Cat, the space part of Space Cat, is the rhetorical situation. So we're going to look at in the order of space, speaker, purpose, audience, context.
Yeah.
And then exigence. It's hard to do out loud.
I know.
So those are the places where I would start with a rhetorical analysis and understanding just the conditions of the poem, not even the inside of the text itself. So, I mean, knowing one, who Langston Hughes is a huge part of this piece. Knowing about the Harlem Renaissance mm-hmm. and all of the things that are surrounding this time frame, decade, and the work going in there, that's all incredibly important when we're going to start to interpret the piece.
Yes.
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 Yes. Because, well, no, I just, my brain did a little bird walk. I started thinking about The Great Gatsby. I started thinking about my unit about American dreams, and I'm replanning next year's unit. I'll stop. I'm here.
Well, and so in a lesson, it's a good place to start to have kids, you know, work together. Let's fill up space. Let's see what can we note on the board, on a uh-huh. handout, on whatever organizer you have. What do we know about the rhetorical situation here? Because if we're going to do a rhetorical analysis, then this poem needs to be interpreted within the context of it. You know, we're not looking at it as a piece of art on the wall with some right. anonymous, you know, person behind it, which you can do with this poem if you really want to, but
this isn't a reader response. This is this is a different lens. Yes.
Yeah. It's knowing the moment. And if you're using it in conjunction with a unit like Raisin in the Sun or something else, like that's incredibly relevant and part of this whole experience. And so then we read the poem, you know, we can look at, you know, for me, I think what's so powerful, I guess I should probably read it for everyone. If you're not remembering the whole thing, it's really short. It goes, what happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? So we can do all of the poetic analysis we want of that piece. But when we get to the point, and Marie, I know you've taught this with your kids, we always get to this question where I ask them at the end about their interpretation of the word explode mm-hmm. at the end. And, you know, they're like, well, it could be exploding like fireworks. It could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing.
They get very 4th of July-y. Yeah.
Yes. And so there's all these, right, and that's great. Like, I totally want all of those interpretations. Like, bring them in. I'm not saying no to anybody. But now what I can do with a rhetorical analysis lens is turn it a little bit and say, okay, well, let's consider the fact of when this was written, who this was written by, who the audience was.
Yes.
That is going to eliminate some of these interpretations because you have to consider, right, like what the context and the speaker, all these things we know about the situation, we have to keep that as part of the analysis. It can't be absent from that. And so then it helps students start to see, okay, there's not a right and a wrong, but there's a wrong, and then there's a better.
Well, there's a less informed and there's a more considerate, right?
Yeah.
Like there's a, and what, I mean, what I have found using rhetorical analysis and specifically looking at like the rhetorical triangle and rhetorical situation or breaking apart or whatever, going through this process with students with things that are more challenging, like poetry, even a very simple, teeny tiny little poem like Harlem, because it's tiny by length, but it is mighty by meaning. It makes it approachable and accessible for our students who are daunted by this. Yeah. And I mean, the same, we talked about this in the Shakespeare and rhetoric episode as well. Like it creates a space where students, because you're going to have kids coming right in who have either seen it before or are just really good at this. And they're going to scare the pants off of the kids who came in already kind of anxious about it. Yes. And it levels the playing field and it makes everybody start considering a lot of different things all at the same time in order to create their interpretation and their analysis. All right, my friend. Okay, so do you want to go first or am I going to go first? Like, how long are you going to hold on to your surprise poem? How long are we building this anticipation?
I don't know, because now I kind of want to talk about two. But I'm gonna, I know the meat of the one that I'm going to talk about, but I would love to hear yours. I'm actually very curious about yours. I mean, I'm curious.
Okay. So this is one that I know I've talked about on the podcast a few times, the course that I got to help write for my district, ethnic literature course for 12th grade. And the first unit in this course is a unit all about identity. It's a very reflective, introspective, getting students ready to talk about some really big topics like power, oppression, resistance, etc. And to get there, we need to do a lot of like inner work. And so this is that. This is looking inside, looking at their own identity, looking at how they identify themselves, how the outside world identifies them with or without their consent, right? And so it's a really cool unit and students get a lot out of it. And it can be hard for some of our kids who are not ready to look in. So there are various levels of basically, I mean, I find myself like a broken record in this unit saying, whatever you feel safe or whatever you feel comfortable sharing, share. And what you don't feel safe and you don't feel comfortable sharing, don't share that. Like you are the only person in control of yourself and how much you divulge to the public. So this poem is, I want to say like 2/3, 3/4 of the way through that unit. It is called A Short Note to My Very Critical and Well-Beloved Friends and Comrades by June Jordan. Are you familiar with this poem, my friend? I had never seen it until one of my friends, like one of my colleagues on this little curriculum team was like, I have the perfect poem. And I was like, great, because I know very little. And so do you want me to just read it? It's kind of short.
Please.
Okay, let me expand my screen here. It says, I said it's by poet June Jordan. She lived from 1936 to 2002. I think that's important to note the like time frame in which she was writing and when she was an adult, really. First, they said I was too light. Then they said I was too dark. Then they said I was too different. Then they said I was too much the same. Then they said I was too young. Then they said I was too old. Then they said I was too interracial. Then they said I was too much a nationalist. Then they said I was too silly. Then they said I was too angry. Then they said I was too idealistic. Then they said I was too confusing altogether. Make up your mind, they said. Are you militant or sweet? Are you vegetarian or meat? Are you straight or are you gay? And I said, hey, it's not about my mind. Isn't that good?
Whoa. Yes. I love that.
Yes. Yes. So okay, it's from a collection of her poetry called Directed by Desire, The Complete Poems of June Jordan. And so it's available online. It's available, I think, in libraries too. Like school libraries, I think, often carry this collection of poetry. And it is one of those poems that allow students to access lots of different varied levels of depth, yes. Right? So like getting into this, we have talked a lot in class about how they view themselves, how the outside world, we've talked about mirrors and windows and like seeing themselves represented in the world around them, specifically in media, but like also just then how that translates to the world around you, how like education can be a mirror and a window into like a mirror reflecting yourself and a window into other cultures and other ways of life, people different from you. And so then this poem comes in and we spend some time and it's like deceptively simple, right? Because it's not crazy metaphorical. It's not super high level trying to put it all together. And so students kind of think like, oh, it's a bunch of questions. Oh, statements and then some questions. And then when they really start to peel back the layers, they go, oh, and they do a little bit of poet research and they go, oh, yeah. And I use your big six and I just say, where do you want to start? Yeah. Like pick one around the edges. Where do you want to start? We always end up at some biographical research about the poet because it's pretty important because you get into the interracial nationalist piece of it down in the middle of the poem. And they need to know a little bit about the poet's life to really understand what that means or like to get an informed interpretation. Yeah, we have some amazing conversations.
So cool. I would love to talk about, well, speaker comes to mind first.
Yep.
When I think of big six. And you know, when you teach poetry, it's so dependent on your group of kids and the goal of it, because I feel like a poem like that would be just ripe for chitter chatter and then interpretation, like casual, and then imitation right away. Like you just
So that's what we do. So like in the poetry and creative writing workshop, where we're starting with analysis and understanding and then an interpretation, and then we move into imitation, like just like we're talking about in the workshop. That's what we do here. They then write their own original poem and they've got options. They can use this as a springboard and do something completely different 9 times out of 10. I say, or you can use this exact model and make it apply to you and make it comparable in length and content.
The speaker jumped out to me and so did the turn. I feel like I heard the turn at the very end. Right.
Yes.
Was okay. I think that is also too. So if teachers are ever, you know, thinking like how to set up imitation can be very difficult when you think about okay, I want my students to use this as a mentor. It can be difficult to think through how much of it, kind of like you're saying, how much of it you want them to imitate and what is worth imitating. So for me, it really kind of comes down to a couple of things, but I really like looking structurally at imitation, because that's something that kids can imitate without feeling like they're doing right the exact same thing, right? Imitating a structure is a really fun way. So like saying, I want you to imitate this poem, but I want you to imitate the location of the turn. Write a poem that has a long setup and then a really quick, fast turn.
And then a one line turn. Yes.
That all of a sudden, like you were being led down this path all the way.
And then
whooping. Lucky for everyone here, next week's episode, I actually got to sit down with one of my creative writing professors from undergrad. And we talk about the poetic turn at length, nauseam. it's an entire episode dedicated to the turn. So if you are excited about
niche content, man. Yes.
But I think it's one of those things that teachers see that on a list of things I'm supposed to teach. And then you feel like I'm supposed to know that. And I don't think I know that. So it's that kind of an episode that's going to break it down and like help you. But all that to say, I think that poem is a beautiful example of teaching turn.
I know. And like, I never would have found it on my, I mean, not never, but like I very thankful to my friend and colleague who was like, I got the perfect thing, because it really is. And like, I've now used this poem with 3 different classes because I've taught the course. I'm in my 3rd round of teaching the course. And as I get better at it, our conversations get better, right? As I get more comfortable and, you know, it's just like teaching anything. You hear kids say more things, and then you think of more questions to prompt the next class with. Poetry is not something that I've ever been afraid of. It's not something that makes me particularly uncomfortable. I think I just am so much more comfortable in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, that poetry, because I've been so steeped in it over my educational career and then my career, that I don't know.
And that's the beauty of our discipline. And I think of students having so many different teachers in their lives is
totally
they hit everyone at a different point, and that's a gorgeous thing.
Yeah. I think I get uncomfortable with the gray area of things too. Mm.
We talked about that, I think.
And they talked about it many times. Yes. Yeah. That's why I used to really like French worksheets, because there was always a correct answer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's funny because I'm like, whatever, there's all the answers. But for some reason with poetry, I think it like throws me off my game. But I love this one. It's great.
Well, I think that's what we're actively trying to combat too for the student experience.
Totally.
We feel that because that's how it was set up for us in high school. It was this.
Correct or incorrect. Yes.
Correct or incorrect. And like, and even though it was like, there was just like that intellectual gatekeeping, you know, like I remember. Right. That.
I was only going to be cool like my friends who took honors classes and AP classes. If I could, and like, that's part of the reason I never took those classes, is I was like, well, I don't know what that says, because I just didn't know how to approach it. Like, I didn't even know, I didn't have the key to unlock it. I didn't have the big six.
Oh, it's true. Okay. Are you ready for mine?
I am. Are you going to give us two?
No, I'll just do one. And if I ramble at the end, I will, but I will focus on this one.
I'm here for it. What you got?
Well, the reason I hesitate is because I feel like my one is so predictable. It's such a frequently taught poem that I thought I was going to come here with a more indie selection. But the truth of it is, this poem was always very hard for me to teach. But then I found a solution and I thought, okay, that's what I should share on the podcast.
Yeah.
My indie, you know, list of bizarrely weird poems that I
taught. Well, but your indie list is in your Poetry March Madness.
They're all in Poetry March Madness. And even if you're not going to do March Madness, you should download Poetry
March Madness. Just do it for the, yeah. Poems. For the poem selection. Like, it's so good. Yes.
It's really good. It's really good. So I want to talk today about Langston Hughes.
Every single time I hear the name Langston Hughes, my mind goes, it's because I'm a musical theater nerd. Langston Hughes. I go straight to Rent. No, just me?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Pablo Neruda. Okay. Yeah.
Oh my God, I love Rent. I have not watched that in so long.
Because you have children and it's not appropriate. Yeah. Because you're never alone. That's why.
This might be it.
Yeah.
I was a huge Rent. I saw it in Chicago in the front row. I remember, like, I mean, Anthony Rapp, the whole, yes.
Yeah, there. I'm bringing you back, aren't I?
Okay. Langston Hughes.
Okay.
I have talked about Harlem a lot. So I'm not talking about Harlem. I want to talk about Let America Be America Again. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with this poem, the trickiest thing about this poem is it's very, very long. And that used to always trip me up. Not to mention, I was teaching American Lit in a Trump era, you know, world where, you know, this conversation around freedom and America and identity and race and everything was always like approach with caution, you know, and like, this is
sure. And I can see some hot button things with the words America and again.
Yes. Very
in the same. I mean, it just the correlation. Yeah.
Yeah. Because my American Lit journey started at my second school. So I never taught American Lit until I moved schools. And when I moved schools, I had a couple pre-pandemic years, a couple pandemic years, and a post-pandemic year. So like, my American Lit experience was all colored very much by the context that I was teaching it in.
Sure.
And it's a long poem. So it's tense a little bit, and it's messaging. I was in a very mixed tense type of, you know, room. Certainly wasn't avoiding it, certainly was going into it, because poetry is poetry and all the things. And so I really wanted to make sure that it didn't get either misconstrued, oversimplified, right? Yeah. There were a lot of ways it can go, especially because it was long, because kids wanted to read something long, like prose, because they didn't have the energy for a long poem. And lo and behold, a couple, I don't know what which month it was for our happy hour, but we did a happy hour a month talking all about Jigsaw. And this was like a pseudo Jigsaw solution. But what I did was I took the poem and I chopped it up. we listen to it first, right? We listen. There's a beautiful production of it on YouTube. I will link the video in the show notes for you all. So we of course listened to the whole thing once, so they've heard the whole thing straight through. And then what I did is I took on Google Slides, I chopped up the poem into 4 to 5 to 6 line chunks. They were typically stanzas. Sometimes I kind of had to mush things together, but I then distributed pieces of the poem out amongst the class. So I'm on the doc right now. Let's see. There were I had 7 slides. So there were 7 groups. So I probably did 2 sets of 7 groups or something like that, because I wanted to keep
it small.
And I gave them these directions. The direction said to visually annotate your stanza of the poem. And here's what you're looking to illustrate and annotate. First was historical references. What does the reference encourage you to picture in your mind's eye? The American values. What references do you see to American values? How are they connotated? And diction. What individual or small groups of words convey the speaker's tone and attitude?
That's fantastic. And so
a great example of that would be, let me give you this. This is a great stanza. Oh, let my land be a land where liberty is crowned with no false patriotic wreath, but opportunity is real and life is free. Equality is in the air we breathe. I mean, like, my gut kind of starts to just like, it's just so gorgeous, right? This idea of no false patriotic wreath. That group had to wrestle with that line quite a bit. And I think that what happened was when I chunked up the poem, it gave kids the permission to only sit on their one set of lines for a while and breathe that in. And so what that did was they became the expert in their stanza. So then when we came back all together, I don't know if we did a formal jigsaw or we just kind of came back together on the Elmo, but I feel like what I did was we came back together on the Elmo and I went through the poem at the front stanza by stanza and had the groups, right? Like, okay, whoever had this stanza, like,
give me your annotations. Yeah.
Yes. You know, hand them in. And like, we kind of just did this like open discussion stanza by stanza. It was a long lesson. I think it took 2 days.
Sure.
But the goal was to get through, right, the imagery, the allusions, and eventually to the theme, right? What are the themes? What is the speaker's message here? Yeah. And that seemed to be the best way to do this poem justice. Like, if you're going to do it, take the time to do it.
What a great way to give everybody the opportunity, and not just the opportunity, but like kind of forced participation in a very low stakes way.
Yes.
Like, I think of, like, you know, like pulling popsicle sticks with people's names and stuff on them. You don't have to pull anything because there was only, what, 4 kids responsible for each stanza, or however you chunked it up. And that kind of gives them that like team aspect to it. That's where a jigsaw, speaking of like the jigsaw you're talking about, like that, that's where it works really, really well is when like we're kind of all counting on you. And so therefore you get to show us where you shine. Yeah, that's really cool.
Well, and I think especially with poetry and difficult text.
All right, friends, like we said in the intro, we would like to know how you are appreciating these sort of roundup episodes. And if you've had a chance to go and subscribe to Brave New Teaching on YouTube and checked out this playlist specifically about the poetry episodes that you've heard here, let us know. Like, is it working? We know that it would work for us, but, you know, we got to hear from you too to actually hear how things are going.
That's so important. And we hope that this is something that just gave you a little boost for your week, gave you a little nudge to try something new, because that's what we're all about here at Brave New Teaching, is nudging you into the new.
Nudging along. It's the new part, the new nudge, new teaching, brave new teaching.
Oh,
hey, everybody. Word. Have a great week at school. And... thank you very much for joining us. We will see
Happy
you
Happy National Poetry Month. Happy Poetry Month.
Poetry Month. We've got a little bit more poetry stuff coming at you, especially if you are a member of Happy Hour. So buckle up, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching.
We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.